Hi, this is Kat Alvarado, and you're listening to Villains of History. Hi guys, this is Kat Alvarado, and you're listening to the Villains of History podcast, where we talk about horrible people from the past who do horrible, terrible things, and we learn about stuff, while also being light and fluffy and laughing, even though it's horrible, like objectively terrifying. And today, we have a really funny guest. Honestly, he's like one of the funniest guys I see around the LA scene. He is from Pittsburgh, has done CBS Radio and Steel City Media. You can hear him on the Mike Sasson Show on the River's Edge radio station out of Pittsburgh. Mike Sasson.
Hey, how's everybody doing? You know, you're right. It is the Mike Sasson Show. It took literally hundreds of thousands of dollars and hiring a multimedia firm to come up with that name. Because a lot of people were like, what should we name the show? And I was just like, I don't know. My name's Mike Sasson. Let's call it the Mike Sasson Show. And we're like, no, let's do some research. Let's figure that out. And then they were like, you know what? Do it the Mike Sasson Show. Let's just do that. So
it's like, that's like Occam's razor. Like sometimes it's the simplest thing is the best thing.
Absolutely.
Best explanation.
I'm all about razors and Occam as well.
So what have you been up to late? Like, what do you think of the LA scene so far? You've been here, you said 7 months earlier.
Yes, I came here in the spring. It is now, we're in November. You wouldn't tell from the weather. It's going to be 85 or 90.
Oh, that means it's your first California winter.
It is my first California winter.
I know. Be careful. It's nippy out.
I know. That's one thing that people, anybody, when you move here, the first thing they say is, oh, how do you like the weather? And the thing is, it was during the spring and the summer. So I was like, well, it's warm back in the Northeast. It's not that big a difference. Now is when it really starts to hit you because, like, for instance, it was like 45 and, you know, rainy back home. Or like, for instance, this week I was also in Chicago doing some things. And it was, yeah, it was like 38 and I could see my breath and all this kind of stuff. And then you get back here and it's 80 degrees and sunny. And you're just like, ah, okay. Now I can see why the real estate is so expensive.
Yeah, the weather is definitely pretty great here. And the bonus is that it's good for depression, which is perfect since you're here to pursue your dream in the entertainment industry. And that can be a hella depressing process and journey.
I hate to be the comic, but actually I'm working on a bit where, like, if what would it be weird to have a doctor that they didn't prescribe antidepressants, they just prescribed, like, you know what would be good for you? Fame.
You just need to be famous. Yeah. Just go be famous.
Yeah, that'll
cure
everything.
Just go do it.
Yeah, that'll cure everything.
I think what's been great about truly pursuing comedy and like putting my money where my mouth is and like going after my dreams is you can't stay in this entertainment industry and being an artist and be that attached to the idea of being famous, because eventually it'll break you. Because it's not like you move here and then all of a sudden you make it. It's like years and years and years.
Michael Keaton, the Pittsburgh guy, Batman and Mr. Mm-hmm. Mom and stuff like that, he actually went back to, he's like, I think he like teaches like a little bit at like Carnegie Mellon and stuff mm-hmm. like that. So he was speaking to a group of actors that were out there. And he sat there and he goes, if your goal is to be an actor, you will love doing commercials. You will love doing local theater. You will love doing all of these wonderful things and you will have the greatest life in the world. If your goal in life is to be famous and to be a movie star, I will guarantee you, you will have a very hard life and you will have a very sad life.
100%.
So the goal is, of course, to prove Michael Keaton wrong and become famous so that you can shove it in Batman's face and say, see, Michael, I'm famous and it's the only thing that made me happy.
Well, you know who probably could have used some good coaching to like tame his ego and his ambitions?
Kat?
Mussolini.
Great transition. Yeah, I would say that Mussolini needed a whole hell of a lot of coaching. He needed a
Heck
whole.
Yeah.
And also, here's my theory about the whole dictators, and I know you're the expert on this. Mm-hmm. I believe they're if you were to take a psychological study of an average dictator, run-of-the-mill evil dictator, and the average, like, Hollywood kind of fame whore scumbag, they're almost the same human being. They're very much people that have a hole in their hearts that need to be filled with something. And they both think they're doing well, mm-hmm. but ultimately what Mussolini, somewhere along the line, somewhere Mussolini needed to be told, you're okay just being you.
Just hug him. Just give him a hug. Yeah. You don't have to be Il Duce. Yeah. You can just
don't make fun of his giant bald head.
A regular douche. Yeah. Just be a regular douche.
A douche.
So let's get into Mussolini's life. There's a lot to it. So let's start. Mussolini was the first child of a local blacksmith. His dad was a part-time socialist journalist, which makes it sound like he was a part-time socialist, like he was a fascist the rest of the time.
Yeah. Sometimes he was socialist. Sometimes he just had other political leanings, but he also liked to shoe horses because he was a blacksmith.
Right. I guess so. He was a part-time journalist of socialist inclinations. Mm. Maybe that's what they meant.
He was a socialist blacksmith. He's like, oh, you know, we should share horseshoes. There.
Boom. There you go. That's what he was. And the son of a lieutenant in the National Guard. His mother was a school teacher. They were working class, although later in propaganda, he would say he was way more poor than he really was.
Yeah, nobody ever, like, in when they're running for political office, likes to bring up if they were either affluent and or that they always want to give a story to where
I'm a man, I rose through the ranks and all that. But he did live kind of a humble upbringing. They lived in two crowded rooms on the second floor of a small, decrepit palazzo. Don't know what that is. I imagine it's an apartment. And because Mussolini's father spent much of his time discussing politics in taverns and most of his money on his mistresses, the meals that his three children ate were often meager. And by the way, side note, a lot of my information, I got it from Encyclopedia Britannica, a little dash of Wikipedia, and also a really great documentary on YouTube called Mussolini Documentary, Biography of the Life of Benito Mussolini from the People's Profiles. So you can find that just to plagiarize.
Yeah. But I would say that to be hungry anywhere is horrible, but to be hungry in Italy with that amazing food around there, that's got to really suck.
Because you always have the smell.
Yeah.
Imagine being hungry and it's always amazing garlic bread.
Yes. Everywhere around you, so they're making just great for, you know, just great pizza, great pasta.
Now I understand his misery.
Yeah.
It's just, that sucks.
That, and I'm going to bring this up again, bald is a cue ball.
I mean, I don't think he was bald his whole life.
I think he was.
When he was young.
He was he looks like Lex Luthor. Did you ever see Lex Luthor in those like Superman cartoons?
Mm-hmm.
$20. I got $20 in my whole pocket. I'm telling you, the people who invented Lex Luthor looked at Mussolini and sat there and said, that's who we're modeling after. That and possibly Destro, if you've ever
seen
G.I.
All right,
G.I.
Joe. I just pulled up pictures of young Mussolini, and guess what? He had freaking hair. But I bet you he did. He does look kind of young in one of them.
That looks like a wig. That looks like that's a toupee.
I do think he went prematurely bald. There's some pictures here where his hairline is like pretty far back.
That's
and he is
him
not
when
old.
He was 13 years old.
No, he's clearly like 25 at least.
No. Yeah. That's his schoolboy outfit. But now he's, yep, there it is. That's a very longing picture.
Yeah. He had some very intense eyes. Very
and a weird
eyes.
Hat. That no, was a weird. And,
yeah, there's pictures of him in weird hats. You can pull them up. Yeah. Anyways, let's keep going.
Okay.
So he was a restless child. He was disobedient, unruly, aggressive. He was a bully. He was moody. He got sent to boarding school. He got expelled twice for stabbing kids with pen knives. This guy was a rabble rouser.
To put it lightly, that is a very polite way to call somebody who stabbed a guy twice a rabble rouser.
He was a troublemaker for sure.
I'm sure when you go to in front of a judge and you've stabbed two people, if you sit there and be like, "Hey, look at you, rabble rouser. Stop stabbing people."
Okay, let me redo that. He wasn't a rabble rouser. He's a freaking criminal.
Yes. I would say
criminal.
There you go.
Hell, stabbing people
just say
with
it.
A pen knife.
Yes.
Jesus Christ, dude.
Plus also going to boarding school. Rich kid. Go ahead.
That's true. Something's not adding up here. Mm-hmm. He went to school to become... Oh, maybe his mom had like an employee discount. She was a school teacher. I don't know.
Who knows?
Who knows?
If they had employee discounts back
then. I don't think that's a thing. He went to school also to be... He went to school to become a teacher, but soon realized it wasn't for him.
Did he ever study evil dictatorship in school?
I don't know. Maybe that was an elective.
Okay. That was like his minor?
Perhaps. At the age of 19, he left Italy for Switzerland with a nickel medallion of Karl Marx in his empty pockets. For the next few months, he was a bit of a vagabond, hashtag wanderlust, doing odd jobs and just living day to day. And he started getting a reputation as a speaker. So I imagine he was going to open mics or something. But he had a really magnetic personality, you know, stage presence.
Yes.
People were like,
he went to dictator open mics where people were like, I'm going to be a dictator. No, I'm going to be a dictator. I'm going to be a dictator. And then he went to there and be like, wow, this guy, like he paid his $5 or his 5 lira or whatever.
To go talk. The Toastmasters.
Yeah. And then he would talk and like, you know what? This kid might be a future dictator.
You got something.
You
kid.
Got something.
You
kid.
Got something.
You got an agent.
Some guy.
There you go.
Some guy with a cigar. Like, yeah. Hey, see. He started reading a lot of political philosophy, taking bits and pieces from all of the greats, and forming his own philosophy, which, according to Encyclopedia Britannica, was incoherent. I love that shade. Encyclopedia Britannica, of all places, was like his philosophy was incoherent. That makes sound like the ramblings of a madman. Whatever they were, he was confident enough that people were like, that sounds good. He seemed really smart, though, and people were impressed by him, so he started his career as a speaker and a journalist, producing propaganda for a trade union. He proposed a strike and advocated violence as a means of enforcing demands. Repeatedly, he called for a day of, quote, vengeance, and more than once, he was arrested and imprisoned. When he returned to Italy in 1904, even the Roman newspapers had started to mention his name. He went back to teaching for a time, then got bored and returned to journalism. And for some reason, this whole thing reminds me a little bit of Milo Yiannopoulos in the sense that he's just a shit starter. He's going around talking shit and upsetting people and making people think and having opinions that are strong. And there's enough people paying attention.
But incoherent, but also incoherent.
Of course.
Yes.
But I don't think anybody's really like putting it together at that point in time, which it's kind of like today in today's media. There's such a news cycle that you get a clip, you know, you get a clip of a person talking today. You hear about them 2 weeks from now, but you didn't know what they said in the interim. You just get bits and pieces.
Do you think that social media and modern media would have made this faster for him, or slowed him down a little bit, because then people would have wanted more from him? Because I think when you're this kind of like cuckoo for Cocoa Puffs, ultimately just saying one thing and then keeping quiet, and then someone says, hey, you know that thing you said 3 weeks ago, as opposed to having to do constant.
That's a great question.
Yes.
And I think he would have easily become the president of the United States.
Yep.
Because I think we have a president right now who kind of has an incoherent ideology is kind of contradictory in many ways.
Mm-hmm.
And he just says stuff.
Yep.
And hey, people love him. Not everybody.
Because he's real. Is that one thing that they said? Did he appeal to like the middle of Italy? Did he appeal? And they were talking about the fact that, you know what, let forget those Romans out on the Venetians, forget those people. He's about the real Italians.
Kind of, yeah.
Okay.
We'll get there.
Okay.
We'll get there.
I apologize.
In 1909, he fell in love with a 16-year-old named Rachel Guidi. Judy.
Guidi.
Raquel Guidi.
Anything you say in Italian, just say it like that and it sounds okay.
Okay.
Yeah.
Rachel Guidi. The younger of the two daughters of his father's widowed mistress. What? Yeah. He married his dad's side chick's daughter.
You know what? Ultimately, it's very, again, we're going down the Trump train in a sense that big thing about fathers. It's all about like trying to prove daddy, respect me, all that other kind of good stuff. And so again,
you think this is like trying to get his dad's love kind of a thing?
Of,
if I get together with my dad's mistress's person.
Yeah. Then I'm getting like, you know, it's the same thing.
Oh, you tapped into something real. Yeah. I totally bet that was psychologically
Why would you? I mean, again, it's Italy. It's a lot of, you know, there's lots of attractive women out there. You had to pick the daughter of, you know, someone that your father was. Well, yeah, it's ultimately. And again, you know, when you go back to, again, the Trump, all Donnie's trying to do is make his dad proud from the grave. Yeah. That's all he's doing.
So here he is. He's like, I'm going to actually marry. I'm going to marry someone who looks like the broad that you could only have as a side chick.
Yeah.
That's twisted.
Yep.
Mussolini. That's true. She went to live with him. And that sounds like pasta. Honestly, every time I say Mussolini, I think of like rotini, the twisted.
Yeah.
Yeah. She went to live with him in a damp, cramped apartment in Forlì after. I don't know if you say that.
Again, you say it like that and it sounds okay.
In Forlì.
In the Forlì.
Later married him.
He was a dank and everyone hated him. He was a go on the ball.
She was with him when he was not big and powerful, and that means she was his ride or die.
I agree.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, but sadly we'll get to the end.
Yeah. Or die. Yeah. Soon after the marriage, Mussolini was imprisoned for a fifth time. But by then, Comrade Mussolini had become recognized as one of the most gifted and dangerous of Italy's younger socialists. I read weird. He starts his own newspaper called La Lotta di Classe, The Class Struggle. It's really successful. And then he becomes the editor of a major socialist newspaper, Avanti, which means forward, where he thunderously opposed Italy's intervention in World War I. But soon he changes his mind about intervention. Swayed by the idea from Karl Marx that social revolution usually follows war, he starts writing articles and making speeches that really favor World War I.
So he really wasn't in favor of the actual war. He just felt that, hey, this war will ultimately get what I want, which is revolution.
Which reminds me of some of my friends who are socialists who were like, yeah, let's vote for Trump. I had friends like that who wanted to vote for Trump because they're like, yeah, it'll lead to the collapse of America. And then, well, if you burn it all down, we can rebuild it and make it better. And I'm like, whoa, man, that's some intense stuff.
Well, that's just, yeah, that might be overthinking it, but go ahead.
I know some wild people.
Yeah.
Anywho, he resigned from Avanti, was expelled from the
Socialist
Party. By
the way, the Avanti sounds like a car I used to own.
Right?
Yeah, I used to own Avanti. Had good gas mileage.
Right. Yeah. Okay, so. Financed by the French government and Italian industrialists, both of whom favored war in Austria, he assumed the editorship of another newspaper called Il Popolo d'Italia, the people of Italy.
So here's the thing. The newspaper was being financed. See, that's why you get, even back then, corporate control of media.
Yep.
Everything is new. What was old again?
Yep. So history repeats itself. Mm. It does all the time.
Exactly.
In series like, are you talking to me?
There's nothing to repeat.
I'm not talking to you, Siri.
Yeah, you're saying history repeats itself, Siri. You're a liar.
So from his start of joining the people of Italy, he started his new philosophy. Quote, from today onward, we are all Italians and nothing but Italians. Now that steel has met steel, one single cry comes from our hearts. Viva Italia! Long live Italy! It was the birth cry of fascism, and Mussolini went into fight in the war.
So he wanted fascism to take over Italy. So he ultimately said that these are my people. We are going to go fight this war. But again, it's corporate entities wanting to, like, hey, let's get this war going thing.
They just know that he's a mouthpiece in favor of the outcome that they want. Mm. And so they're like, yeah, come do it. Kind of like, you hire the person you want to send your message. It's like any kind of talking head on Fox News or NBC or whatever. They just have the person who supports their point of view and pay him.
Except, obviously, Brian Williams actually never did go to war, because that's what got Brian Williams in trouble, because he claimed he did. So in that way, Brian Williams needed to take a cue from Mussolini and actually go to war. Remember that whole thing?
Yeah, because
he said he was like, I was in Iraq and I got shot at. And they're like, you were in New Jersey.
Oh, my God. That's like the opposite of Iraq in so many ways.
Yeah, yes. Certain parts of New Jersey, though.
All right. next part two of chapters. I feel like there's like three parts to this episode.
Him being born.
There's his
marrying
early life.
His father's widow's whatever. Then his rise.
Yeah, we're starting his rise.
The rise of
part
Mussolini.
Part three is going to be World War II and his downfall.
Yeah.
Right, so his rise to power. Mm-hmm. So he gets wounded while serving as a sharpshooter. He returns home as a convinced anti-socialist.
Dun, dun, dun.
And a man with a sense of destiny. As early as February 1918, he started advocating for the emergence of a dictator. He goes, "We need a man who's ruthless, energetic enough to make a clean sweep and confront the economic and political crisis that is gripping Italy." Oh, really? We need a dictator. Interesting that he's advocating for this. Who do you think it should be?
I don't know.
Let's
hopefully
find
he
out.
Drives an Avanti.
3 months later, in a widely reported speech, he hints that he himself might prove to be such a man.
What?
Who saw that coming?
Wow.
This girl. The following year, the nucleus of the party that prepared to support his idea was formed in Milan.
So he has no political backing. I mean, he has no political experience. Never even been the dog catcher. And all of a sudden, he's like, you know what? I should run the whole damn country.
It's arguable whether or not he's got political experience. I mean, I guess.
He ran a newspaper. He never was like an elected
experience.
Official
he's a
or
journalist,
anything.
And he was a yeah. soldier.
You ever
That's
met a journalist?
Not,
they're barely.
He's
eligible.
Not like. He doesn't know how to govern.
Yeah, they're barely. barely employable.
Mm-hmm. I mean, hey, some journalists are smart. Anyways.
I didn't say they weren't smart. I just said they're not employable.
I'm not going to argue with that. In an office in Piazza San Sepolcro, about 200 assorted political types and soldiers from several different parties and groups met to discuss the establishment of a new force in Italian politics. Mussolini called this force the Fasci di Combattimento, or fighting bands. Groups of fighters bound together by ties as close as those that secured the fasces of the lictors, symbols of ancient Roman authority. So fascism was created... And its symbol was devised. What are lictors?
That's that thing you take if you got a heart condition.
That's Lipitor.
Oh.
Lictors, fasces of lictors.
Okay.
Okay. So fasces are bundles that were carried by attendants as characterized by an axe head projecting from a bundle or elm of birch rods. Tied together with a red strap.
So that was like their symbol. That was
power.
Their symbol, the rods being together. And they're trying to bring back Romans and be fighting the yeah. establishment and create a new Italy under fascism.
Yes. So he had rallies surrounded by protesters wearing black shirts. Mussolini had a lot of stage presence. He had an impressive physique.
How tall was he?
Good question. How tall?
Over under 6 foot. What is he?
What's your guess?
6 foot.
No. 5'7".
5'7" and impressive. See? I can never vote for a dictator that wasn't at least 6'2". Come on.
Right? That's how I feel about dating.
I know. I'm 6'4", by the way, all you podcasters out there. So good thing I don't want to be a dictator because
well,
I
like
think...
You don't need to be a dictator. You're just physically imposing.
I know. I'm way more physically imposing than Mussolini, and he took over a country. And that's kind of... that. You know what? That makes me feel kind of like, Mike, what are you doing with your life?
You're not a bad guy.
I know I'm not
You're
a bad
a good
guy.
Guy.
I have a full head of hair. I'm 6'4". I'm wearing a giant shirt with a husky dog on it. I could literally have taken over countries back in the early 1900s.
This is true.
Yeah.
All right. So Mussolini supposedly had an impressive physique. And his
at 5'7".
At 5'7". Yeah. His style of oratory was staccato and repetitive. And supposedly superb. His attitudes were highly theatrical. Okay, this is the part that reminds me of Trump. His attitudes were highly theatrical. His opinions contradictory. His facts were often wrong. And his attacks were frequently malicious and misdirected. But his words were so dramatic and his metaphors so apt and striking and repetitive gestures so extraordinarily effective that he rarely failed to impose his mood.
Essentially, the crowd was just so taken by the fact that this guy was so exciting, they really didn't care what he said.
Exactly.
And to be honest, that goes back to the fact that these were very easily entertained people because, again, they did not have cool comedy.
Or like, Netflix.
Yeah, or Netflix or any sort of social media.
Or Vine.
Or like any sort of like cats playing piano or anything
no,
that we
if they
enjoy.
Had only had cats playing piano, World War II would not have happened.
Yes, none of maybe. This would happen.
Okay. Fascist squads, inspired by Mussolini, but often created by local leaders, swept through the countryside of the Po Valley and the Puglian Plains and rounded up socialists, burning down union and party offices and terrorizing the local population. Hundreds of radicals were humiliated, beaten, or killed. And by radicals, I believe I mean like socialist communist type radicals.
Okay.
They were beaten and killed. In late 1920, the Black Shirt Squads, Mussolini's thugs, mm-hmm. often with the direct help of landowners, began to attack local government institutions to prevent left-wing administrations from taking power. Mussolini encouraged the squads, although soon he tried to control them, and organized similar raids in and around Milan. By late 1921, the fascists controlled large parts of Italy and the left, in part because of its failures from post-war years, had basically collapsed. The government, dominated by middle-class liberals, did little to combat this lawlessness, both through weak political will and a desire to see the mainly working-class left defeated. So, I don't know. I feel like it sort of echoes what's going on, right? What I feel would happen if suddenly, when had fascists going around beating things. Our liberal middle class is like, well, we all went to college. We don't like fight. We don't like guns. We don't get up off of our butts and like...
Yeah, people at the time were, again, it's post-World War One. Things are terrible. It's the rise of, especially in the most decimated parts of Europe. There's terrible economic situations. There's and the government just doesn't seem to be able to do anything. And so these people, they represented action. They represented something. They represented a chance. And again, when you talk about a lot of people, when they look at today's political situation, they like the fact that the current president isn't someone who speaks the same way as everyone else has always spoken. They like the fact that this guy seems to want action, and also the fact that even if he contradicts himself, he at least gives them points that they can be inspired by and that make sense to their limited viewpoints of how the world is supposed to work.
It makes sense to them. They feel like, okay, he's from outside of the government, so maybe he can make more things happen. Yes. Rather than waiting for the bureaucracy to make things happen.
Yeah, the fact that he has no government experience in their minds is a huge plus, not a negative.
And we see that both with Trump and with Mussolini. Like the thing about fascism is people who support it, they want to fix the broken problems in their country. And rather than waiting for a slow political process and bureaucracy to go through and think about it and go through the different legal things to get it done, they want someone to just be strong and get in there and get it done. And that, unfortunately, it kind of is like a self-perpetuating cycle, because if you've got a group of people who are not getting shit done, and a group of people who get shit done by definition, and then the get shit done people start fighting the people who are slow and don't get shit done, guess who's going to lose? The ones who don't get shit done. So that's why we see these guys slowly taking over. And as the fascist movement built a broad base of support around the ideas of nationalism and anti-Bolshevism, Mussolini began planning to actually seize power at the national level. Right? So we see him, he's rising up. He goes from like unknown journalist to major journalist to big organizer, and now he's getting together all of these groups and he's like, I'm gonna go for the whole thing.
Yep.
The whole banana.
Yep.
Is that a phrase? I think
the whole ball of tacos. The whole big old Avanti.
The whole
car.
Empanada. Is that? I think that's what I was going for.
Yeah.
The whole banana.
Yeah.
Maybe that's what I'll name this episode. The whole banana.
The whole banana. Not just half a banana. Not just the stem that you always throw away.
The whole empanada.
The whole giant banana.
The whole calzone.
The whole calzone.
The whole, not the just part of it. The entire
Especially since this is about Italy, it should be, we should use
the calzone. The whole pizza.
The whole pizza. The whole large pizza.
In the summer of 1922, Mussolini's opportunity presented itself. The remnants of a trade union movement called a general strike. Mussolini declared that unless the government prevented the strike, the fascists would. The fascist volunteers helped to defeat the strike and thus advance the fascist claim to power. At a gathering of 40,000 fascists in Naples on October 24th, Mussolini threatened, either the government will be given to us, or, I said that wrong, I said that weird. On October 24th, Mussolini threatened, either the government will be given to us, or we will seize it by marching on Rome. Oh, that's a threat.
And you have 40,000 people in black shirts.
That's a lot. That's scary.
Yeah.
That's scary. Later that day, Mussolini and the other leading fascists decided that 4 days later, the fascist militia mm-hmm. would advance on Rome.
Where no one was named Melissa.
Mm-hmm. In converging columns led by four leading party members known as the Quadrumviri. Mussolini himself was not one of the four. He was hoping for a political compromise, and he refused to move before the king, Victor Emmanuel III, before the king summoned him in writing. Meanwhile, all over Italy, the fascists prepared for action, and the march on Rome began. It was threatening enough to bring down the government, and the king, prepared to accept the fascist alternative, dispatched the telegram for Mussolini to come see him. On October 31st, Halloween, 1922, Mussolini became the youngest prime minister in Italian history. He put together a cabinet of ministers, but made it clear that he intended to govern authoritatively. He obtained full dictatorial powers for a year, and in that year, he pushed through a law that enabled the fascists to cement a majority in parliament. They had elections in 1924, but they were undoubtedly fraudulent and secured his personal power. And this is something I want to point out and note, which is that when you have dictators who are rising through the ranks, they typically don't do it in like, boom, 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 guns, bullets, now I'm the king or whatever. It's more like they amass more and more power, and then they get to a point where then they can change the rules. And when they change the rules, that is when they cement their power in.
Yes.
And you see that over and over and over again. In Nicaragua, we had it with Daniel Ortega. Hitler did it when he was the chancellor. And here we're seeing Mussolini do it. And actually, as
Mussolini actually...
Mussolini did it first.
Yes.
Mussolini inspired
He was the OG fascist scumbag.
Mm-hmm. So this guy's the daddy.
Yeah.
He's the daddy of evil in that sense.
The daddy of fascist evil.
He's
all
like,
5'7" of them.
He's like the Paris Hilton to Hitler's Kim Kardashian.
Exactly. Exactly. Because everyone, no one remembers that the first sex tape was Paris Hilton.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right.
And then Kim Kardashian's like, I can do that.
And then she did it. And then she went way further with it.
Yep.
And now society is worse off as a result.
Yep.
People wanted, transitioning back.
Yes.
People wanted order from chaos, and that's what Mussolini seemed like he could offer as a strong man. There were opposition parties, but trade unions and these opposition parties and the free press were all outlawed. Free speech was crushed, and a network of spies and secret policemen were instated to watch over the population. This repression hit moderate liberals and Catholics as well as the socialists. In 1924, Mussolini's henchmen kidnapped and murdered the socialist deputy Giacomo Matteotti, who had become one of fascism's most effective critics in parliament. The Matteotti crisis shook Mussolini, but he managed to maintain his hold on power. There were many attempts, by the way, on his life, including one in the late 20s where a pistol bullet grazed his nose. So there was stuff going on. But man, like this is one of those situations where you probably couldn't just talk to your neighbor about your opinions about politics, because your neighbor could very well be one of the spies. And next thing you know, somebody comes and they break your legs.
Well, I think it's one of those things, like you talk about the fact that people want order, especially when it seems like the world has chaos. You're coming off this gigantic war. It didn't accomplish much of anything. The economy's faltering. And then all of a sudden, these guys show up and at least action happens. I mean, to this day, you could talk to people and you read things about the fact that, you know what, Mussolini made the trains run on time. It's always one of those things of like, there are those people out there that want, they want everything just to be, you know, everything just work. It's just like people, why can't we make everything work?
Yeah. It's like that moment where you freak out and you try to get everything done that you need to do. And then at the end of the day, you're like, oh, wow, I did it all wrong.
Yeah.
Has that ever happened to you? It happens to me.
Oh, yeah. We'll discuss later.
Yeah. Leaders around the world saw Mussolini as a genius. He seemed to have unified and turned Italy around. But the reality was that that was a lot of propaganda. It's a lot of bullshit. Italy was still very divided and very economically fragile. What's interesting, though, about this fascism is that while when you think of fascism, you think of it's more capitalist. But actually, for Mussolini's Italy, 3/4 of the economy was still in the hands of the state. So in terms of government intervention in the economy, it was actually a lot like the Soviet Union, weirdly enough. For all this anti-socialist stuff, this isn't a free market capitalist country. What? Yeah. This meant that supply and demand were not dictating what crops were grown. It wasn't about markets and what the people wanted. Because you have to understand, in a free market society, if everybody has decided, like, oh, we want we really like making spaghetti with Roma tomatoes, then farmers go, oh, people want Roma tomatoes. Let's grow Roma tomatoes. And there will be, you know, a good amount of Roma tomatoes to meet the demand for Roma tomatoes, right?
That was a beautiful definition of, you know,
supply and demand.
The cycle of tomatoes continues.
Exactly. And then, like, let's say there was something people didn't like. Like, let's say everybody was like, we don't like artichokes.
Nope.
And so the people who grow artichokes are like, let's plant tomatoes instead. Especially, and then you have enough tomatoes and you stop growing artichokes.
Especially since not a huge fan of artichokes.
They suck.
Yes.
No one likes them.
Yeah.
Anywho's, when you have a command and control type economy, instead of the free market and trends and farmers who are like, they know what they're doing. Like, if it's your business, you know your business and you know how to keep your ear to the ground and grow what you need to grow.
Yep.
But the government doesn't know that because that's a lot of information about like bazillions of products.
Yep.
It's hard for the government to
and
know
things
all of
change
these things.
And ultimately, you know, climate and people's wants and desires change and all that other kind of good stuff.
It's very complicated.
Yep.
So when with the Italian government going, okay, we're going to grow this crop and not that crop.
Yep.
They had surpluses of certain crops and shortages of others. And that's not good. And that's especially not good if you're in a country in crisis or in your country trying to go to war. You need everything to be at its best possible. You know, some people say that this economic intervention was in part from his socialist influences. Others say it was because he was so power hungry and wanted to control everything. And I say that historically, those two often go hand in hand.
Yes. I think it was the fact that when you establish yourself as the leader, the reason why you do that is because you feel that your instincts are so right 100% of the time that ultimately anything you think is correct and anybody who is against you needs to be taken care of. So again, it's like, I know that the people want the artichokes, and guess what? The people don't want the artichokes, but he's like, you know what? I know the people better than the people even know the people. So guess what? Even though I'm only 5'7" and bald, I'm telling you what everybody's doing.
Exactly.
Exactly. Yeah. Can't get over the 5'7".
Now, he could have done all right and been successful enough as a dictator. But the thing is, these personalities are never satisfied with, air quotes, enough.
Yes.
I don't know why I added air quotes. They're never satisfied with enough. It's not enough to just be like, okay, now I'm the dictator of Italy. Now he goes, you know what? I want to have some foreign conquests. So he starts going after Ethiopia because they already had some colonies kind of near Ethiopia. And Italy invades October 1935. It's a brutal campaign of colonial conquest in which Italians drop tons of gas bombs upon the Ethiopian people. Europe expressed its horror, but did little else. The League of Nations imposed some sanctions, but didn't impose it on anything that would make a difference, like oil, because that would have maybe provoked a European war. Right? But you know who did think that was cool? Hitler. Anywho.
In life, if Hitler thinks it's cool, typically it's not cool.
Correct.
Yes.
But yeah, so there were no sanctions to help slow Mussolini down. So on the night of May 9th, 1936, he announced Italy had expanded its empire. This moment probably marked the peak of public support for the regime.
Also, yay, we dropped gas bombs on people. Yay.
They went and took over a country that probably was already struggling. And like, that's the one that when everybody's like, oh yeah, what country is the poorest? Everyone always says Ethiopia. Like, that's the one. You went for that's like beating up the kid in the wheelchair. Jesus Christ.
Yeah. But again, their leader's 5'7". That's what happens.
Yeah. But yeah, Hitler thought it was cool. His bro from another hoe.
Yep.
Hitler had looked up to Mussolini for a long time and actually had modeled himself after Moo Moo. I'm going to start calling him Moo Moo.
Okay.
Because it's shorter.
All right.
Okay.
Like, you remember, like, probably not only, remember when George Bush called Saddam Hussein Saddam? He did that purposely because Saddam was like some sort of like exalted name. And so he was like, that's why I call him, you know, Saddam, because he knew that that would like get to him. So that's why, you know, so if let's I would prefer, you know, Mussolini, probably somebody over there that just sounds like, you know, again, powerful.
Mumu.
It's Mumu.
So Mumu.
Yep.
All right. So Hitler had admired Mumu so much that he actually sent him a letter saying, hey, Mumu, I think you're great. Will you send me an autograph? And Mumu didn't reply. Dissed him.
God.
So Hitler, of course, was like, I'll show you I could be just like you, and you're going to like me one day and fear me. You know how those people do.
Mm-hmm.
So once Hitler rose to power in Germany, Mumu had to start taking him seriously. Mumu was nice to Hitler's face, but in private thought he was a paranoid weirdo. He called Hitler a genius in public, but also would tell the U.S. and Britain that he was with them in his opposition to Nazi Germany. Two-faced. He kept his options open. This kind of feels a bit like a frenemies situation. In 1937, Mumu visited Germany, though, and saw how together they were in terms of infrastructure and military, which was terrifyingly impressive. After that, Mumu started copying Germany. When he came back from that trip, he started doing anti-Semitic things like Hitler and made his guys also do the goose step, which I feel is taking away the wrong things. That was the takeaway. Yeah.
Don't build the Autobahn. Don't do the anti-smoking campaign. Go for the goose step.
Of course. Yeah. And anti-Semitism.
Yep.
So, of course, Jewish people in Italy started to suffer and experience a lot of discrimination and hate. Mumu clearly calculated that Germany was stronger than the Western allies and decided to align himself with Hitler. In the coming years, Hitler slowly took over more and more of Europe. And soon, it wasn't enough to just get the stuff he could get through appeasement and being threatening to the West.
Yep.
Because they would just kind of give Hitler stuff,
yep,
you know, hoping he would stop.
Yep.
Soon, Hitler wanted more. Now he wanted Poland. Mumu got jealous and decided to have his forces invade Albania to show he could be just like Hitler and also amass more territories. And so they signed.
It's amazing how much it's like, we're again villains through history. These people, ultimately, they're all just about their own egos, and it's not even about like, oh well, you know, they feel like, oh, we're creating the greatness of Italy. No, they're just jealous douchebags. Then they're just like, oh, you're invading Poland? I'll invade Albania, because that's just what the cool dictators do.
100%.
Yep.
This is, you could make like a metaphor for this whole thing with like high school girls fighting over a boy or whoever. It's keeping up with the Joneses,
yep,
even.
Like, yep.
It's absurd that this is how leaders of countries were ruling. So they signed the Pact of Steel Treaty to make the alliance official, which is funny to me because they really are frenemies. And it's mostly a one-sided agreement, to be honest, where he would only fight with the West, the allies, if they were pretty sure they would win. But this was because
it's in the document. We will we'll show up if we think that there's a good chance we're winning.
Basically, yeah.
Yeah. That's a pretty shitty document.
It is a pretty shitty document, but I think Hitler was probably okay with it because it kind of established that Mussolini was his bitch. I don't really need you, but it's nice if you could like have my back sometimes or whatever.
Yeah.
But this pact is a key thing. It's part of the reason I would say that we're not all speaking German right now. So the reason why it was kind of one-sided is because Mussolini's guys were not yet ready to be fighting.
Mm-hmm.
That didn't matter to Hitler, who just decided, you know what, I'm going to invade Poland. And when he does that, Britain and France invade Germany. And that's when all the shit starts going down. Mussolini's like, whoa, I was not ready for that. And thought that Germany was going to be better than him. So not wanting to be outdone, he decides to step it up, even though his soldiers still weren't ready. And let me illustrate what I mean by weren't ready. There, I read in the book Fascism, A Warning by Madeleine Albright, that at one point, Italian soldiers were sent out to fight in like cold winter with cardboard shoes. Let that sink in. These men are just sent out to battle pretty much to certain death. Like, can you imagine fighting for your life in cardboard shoes that are just going to fall apart?
And again, it shows how much this guy had zero thought about anything that he wasn't trying to help his people. He wasn't trying to, you know, try to create a better life for his people. This thing was all about him, and to send soldiers out ill-prepared and again, cardboard shoes in the middle of the snow.
Yeah, what's going on to make his decisions? It's how do I feel? How does my ego feel? Oh, Hitler's going to one-up me? I'm going to send my people in even though they're not ready. He doesn't care about his country. He cares about himself. And that is one of the biggest problems of authoritarian leaders and dictators is they're not good rulers. They're driven by ego, not by what's actually good for people. And this is what leads to his downfall later. So, okay, Mussolini declares wars on the Allies too, and he persuades the Italian king to give him command of the armed forces, making him like the supreme commander of Italy also. Soon, France surrenders to the Nazis, to the Axis powers, I should say. And Mussolini thought that Britain would also soon surrender. So he decides, okay, you know what? I want to help out with this whole effort. And we all know how important oil is. So Mussolini decides that if he can block the oil from Britain by fighting in Egypt/Libya, then he can get Britain to surrender. And of course, I'm doing a very simplified version of this. And if you want to really get the nitty-gritty details, I encourage you to watch that documentary I mentioned earlier on Mussolini's life that you can find on YouTube called, again, the Mussolini Documentary, Biography of the Life of Benito Mussolini. From the people profiles.
So he sat right, there and he's it. Like, you know what? I'm going to do my part. I'm going to start a war in the Middle East because that's going to ultimately hurt Great Britain. And then they'll quit. And then Hitler will be my bestie because I helped the whole thing.
Exactly. He's like, I'm going to help all of it. So September 1940, he has the Italians invade Egypt/Libya, but he's defeated brutally. They lose 150,000 troops, dead, wounded, and captured. That's a lot of people, probably because he's sending them out there completely ill-equipped.
Yep.
And if also, apparently, Italian soldiers were surrendering to the British by the thousands because they had been forced to join the military in the first place and they didn't even want to fight. And they didn't want to die. They're like, what
for no
are we
point,
doing here?
They weren't defending their nation. They weren't doing anything. They were just in the Middle East, basically for some half.
They're like, we don't even like Mussolini.
Yeah, we're not even doing this. Yeah, they're we just like, want to drive our Avantes and eat the pizza and do what we got to do in life.
We want to go home to mama.
Yeah, this is a terrible.
Oh, poor. I feel bad, honestly. When I read that part of the book by Madeleine Albright, highly recommend it, guys. Please read it. Fascism Warning, Madeleine Albright. This part about the Italians and the cardboard shoes, it made me cry. I honestly cried. It got me right in the gut of holy shit. Like, these are people's sons and cousins and brothers and family members in fucking cardboard shoes.
And 150,000 men dead.
Just dead.
Dead.
On this guy's whim because of his ego.
Yeah, to put that in perspective, what, 60,000 Americans died in Vietnam in over 10 years?
Wow.
So think about 100,000 more people in one battle died for one aspect in literally like a couple weeks.
That was the slot he wanted. Hitler to be his bestie.
Yeah.
And that's not even the end of it. Mm-hmm. Italian soldiers, they were surrendering because they were also nowhere near as trained or as motivated as Hitler's guys. Mussolini had way overestimated his abilities and the abilities of his own troops, and he had vastly underestimated his opponents. And this all damaged Germany greatly as well. But what really decided the outcome of all these campaigns were the air forces and the navies. And just a note on this, because it's kind of interesting, the Italians actually did have some really impressive ships that were modern, and they were better than the British. The British ships, which were kind of old. And so the British had to use every trick in the book to defeat the Italians on that front for the naval part of it. So what the British did is they attacked the main Italian naval base, which is very strategic, and they managed to sink a major battleship and damage two other major ships. Yay, Allies! Mm-hmm. That's us. Hooray.
There you go. Boom.
And this cut the strength of the Italian ships in half. Also, unfortunately, this attack on the naval base inspired the Japanese to do Pearl Harbor. So if you were not aware of that, that's what inspired Pearl Harbor. But in any case, this major raid on the ships greatly weakened the Italians further. But that doesn't stop Mussolini from being like, no, I got this, bro. I'm gonna do something else cool. So they went through Albania and invaded Greece. Did I get that right?
Yes.
Yes. They went through Albania and invaded Greece. And that didn't go well either. They lost more people. Not good. 100,000 more deaths.
Yep.
In this.
Yep.
So that's twice. First, we got 150,000 deaths.
So now 250,000 deaths.
No, 100,000 more deaths.
Yeah, in these stupid things. And yeah, and ultimately, for no purpose, wasn't defending the country, invading countries, just to invade countries.
Because he wants to have a legacy. He wants an empire so he can be Mussolini the Great. He wants to be like Caesar. Mm-hmm. And he wants to be like Hitler.
Yes.
Honestly, he doesn't want to be outdone. And I mean, you can kind of think about the like the psychology of it. Like imagine being like the prima donna, and then there's this younger, beautiful girl who wants to come and take your place on the stage, and you want to sabotage the younger girl or prove your worth. Except for instead of it being like some kind of a drama with opera singers or actresses fighting over who's the better actress, it's
sending 250,000 people to their deaths.
Yes. That's fucked.
Yes.
But.
Yes.
Here's the thing.
Yes.
Mussolini's fuck ups are why we don't speak German. So Hitler realized Mussolini was kind of incompetent and now had to send his people to fix Mussolini's shit in Albania and Greece. And this delayed the Germans' invasion of the Soviet Union, leading to them invading in the winter instead of earlier in the year.
Yeah, because the whole thing was everyone was wondering, why did he start his advancement? I think it was something like in June or something like that, instead of starting it in early spring. Because again, the whole, the history shows that if you go into Russia, the biggest thing you got to fight, not only the Russian army, but the Russian winter. And you want all this done by the Russian winter, which again, we were talking about before the Northeast. Think of, it's cold in the Northeast around Thanksgiving. It's cold in Russia, basically about Labor Day in America. So you've got to have everything done.
Yeah, there's parts of Russia where you can literally like dump water out of a cup and like by the time it hits the ground, it's glass.
Yes.
Yeah. It's that cold. And I don't know if the Northeast is like that too.
No. Northeast of Canada. That'll be about it.
Yeah. So that's how cold it is out there. And ultimately, for those who are not that familiar with World War II history, it's the fact that Hitler had to invade and it ended up going into the winter that so many of his people ended up getting caught in that winter and died, and that greatly weakened him.
Yes. First major loss of the war was in Russia, which basically proved he wasn't invincible and ultimately created the two-front war that ultimately got rid of him.
Yay for getting rid of Hitler.
Yep.
And also Hitler to send his guys to keep fixing
Mussolini being a giant, incompetent, 5'7", balding loser essentially made freedom happen because it made it that Hitler had to cover the fuck-ups of this incompetent 5'7", balding loser, so that ultimately Moo Moo's incompetence was one of the main factors in ultimately the Allies winning the war.
Yes, that's correct.
Yay.
Thank you for summarizing this.
Yay.
Then the U.S. joined and the tides really began to turn. Hooray for America. The Allies took Sicily and then started their invasion of Italy. So now we've got the Allies are kind of coming up like from the south, like mm-hmm. of the toe of the boot.
Yep.
And you got the Germans from the north. They've got the northern part of Italy. This is when Mussolini's health starts to go downhill and steps are taken to remove him from office. He's removed the 25th of July, 1943, and the king of Italy declares the war lost and they throw Moo Moo in prison. But Hitler is loyal to him. And I guess he would be because he lost 250,000 of his troops. So Hitler has his guys, his paratroopers come in and they rescue Mussolini and they free him and take him back to Germany. But before the rescue, the new prime minister of Italy signs an armistice and soon Italy, no longer under Mussolini's control, declares war on Germany. So soon Hitler makes Mussolini leader of the German part of Italy, which is up in the north.
Yep.
But really, Mussolini is just under Hitler's thumb. He's just a puppet. He has no say about what's going on in Italy. And Hitler himself is having a hard time fighting because there's a lot of mountains there. To put it super simply, and again, I'm doing the one-hour version of something about which there are books and books and books and books. So
A&E pretty much dedicated their channel to this for most of the history of their channel. Your grandpa watches constant World War II documentaries. So the fact that we're condensing all of this to an hour is just so that you can have something to talk about with them during Thanksgiving.
You're welcome. this is really like the 20-minute version of World War II. Holy shit, that's tiny.
If you take it from the Mussolini Italian incompetent angle.
Yes, exactly.
Not that we're incompetent. Hitler incompetent. Mussolini really incompetent, plus short, plus bald.
Yes.
I can't stress this enough. Anyone who likes Mussolini has to understand he's 5'7", bald, and incompetent.
All right. On June 4th, 1944, Rome fell to the Allies.
And everyone started a pizza shop back in America because seriously, all of the GIs got pizza for the first time in Italy when they were there. And they went, wow, this is really good. And when they came back in the 40s, that's why in like Kansas City, Missouri, they started pizza shops because they saw them and they ate it over in Italy.
It's delicious.
Yes.
It's the best thing ever.
But before that, you had to, if you wanted pizza, you had to be in like New York or Philly or something like that.
Or we had Italian people.
Yeah. Well, now there was like, you know, like Pizza Hut started in Kansas.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. But that's why.
From GIs who came and they were like, we need pizza here.
We liked pizza
and
here.
Pizza needs to be all over America, driven to people's houses because it's the best thing freaking ever.
Yes. So in a way, the only good thing that came out of Mussolini is him starting a war and ultimately getting American GIs over there that tasted pizza and then brought it over here, which is why you've got a pizza shop on every corner.
Wow. I didn't think wow, that's really interesting. I didn't think I would learn something.
Ultimately, everything comes back to, in the history podcast that Mike Sasson runs, how did we get the delicious food? It ultimately relates to incompetent 5'7", balding loser dictators.
That's correct. At this point in history, Mussolini was a shadow of himself and really was more of a prisoner than an ally of Hitler's with a 24-hour SS guard. I'm sorry, if you've got an SS guard, you're fucked. That means Hitler is probably going to kill you at any moment. And I wouldn't be surprised if Hitler did. I mean, you've seen the movies where he's just like upset, where he's like angry.
And they always put it that he's angry about weird stuff. Like there was the ones
like
where
he will redub it.
Yeah. He's like, he's like mad at the fact that like somebody lost American Idol or something like that.
Eventually, the Italians fought off Germany and they would
yada, yada, yada.
Okay. So Eventually, the Italians fought off Germany from the even the northern part too, and they withdrew. Mumu hoped to escape through the Swiss border into Spain, but was discovered in the back of a truck by a bunch of socialists, and they took him into custody. He and his mistress were taken, and they were shot by a firing squad along with some of his followers. Their corpses were strung up in Milan and then dragged to the streets and then and kicked. Holy shit. Dragged through the streets and then kicked and then buried in an unmarked grave in Milan.
Which is one of the reasons why they feel that Hitler fought literally till the last like moment to where like the Russians were a couple hundred yards away and ultimately killed himself is because he did not want this to happen. That's why also his final order to his people was burn me, destroy my corpse because I don't want this to happen to me.
Oh, wow.
Like they saw that they have the video. There's a picture of him being strung up and Hitler saw it. And he's like, OK, that's the last thing I want to happen to me, which is why they did the whole thing where they, you know.
Oh, my gosh. If I had a leader who was an authoritarian dictator, oh, I would want to string him up so bad. Like what they did is probably so cathartic.
Yeah, I mean, the funny thing is like, I bet you like you could get like some good early shots. But then eventually when it's just like it's been a couple hours, you're like, hey, you want to kick Mussolini? And it's just like this bloody thing.
It's so gruesome, though, if you think about it. Like at first, I'm like, I understand the anger. That's 250,000 people that didn't need.
Yeah,
to
everybody
die.
Had a brother. Everybody had a dad. Everybody had a son. Everybody had a friend.
Every single kick and punch was this is for my loved one.
Yeah.
Gosh.
See, even and if ultimately,
even
that's
if everybody
why.
Everybody who lost a loved one punched him one time. That's 250,000.
See, but
punches.
Here's my problem. Shooting him was too easy. Firing squad, come on. They could have thought, they could have, right. They should have done you're some right. brainstorming, but they didn't. They just were like, let's shoot him. Oh, now let's punch him in the streets. How about we figure that out prior? I bet you some low level guy was like, hey, we got Mussolini. We shot him. We're like, dude, we want to totally string him up in Naples and like punch him. And they're like,
we totally want to just like leave him out to die and get like picked apart by crows.
Yeah.
Like in the Lighthouse movie that.
Oh, I thought you'd like it that I shot him. Like, no, we don't like it that you shot him.
Dummy.
You're an idiot. The worst idea ever, Gary.
Gary. It would have been an Italian Gary, but yeah.
Well, it wouldn't have been. Was it an Italian that found him?
It was Italians.
Oh.
It says commies, but yeah.
Yeah, okay. So Italian but, Gary's. What happened to his wife? Remember the 16-year-old person that he was trying to impress his dad?
The one he was killed with was the mistress.
Yeah, what happened to that lady?
Well, she lived.
Ah.
Rachel Mussolini. She actually lived a long life and died on October 30th, 1979. So she way outlived him. That's like 40 more years.
Wow. When did they get divorced?
30 more years. Well, they renewed their vows in 1915.
Okay.
No, they renewed their vows after his rise to power.
Okay.
She had 5 children by Benito.
Okay.
And was willing to ignore his various mistresses.
Typical.
They had 2 daughters, Eda, Anna Maria, and 3 sons, Vittorio, Bruno, and Romano.
Mm.
And she lived a very fancy-ass lifestyle. She's portrayed as the model fascist housewife and mother. By the way, fascism is like very all about like traditionalism. That's a thing. If you didn't know that, it is. She remained loyal to Mussolini until the end. She did try to flee from Italy after World War II, but in 1945, she was arrested close to Switzerland by Italian partisans. She was turned over to the U.S. And kept on Ischia Island, but was released after several months. In her later life, Rachel Mussolini ran a restaurant in her native village of Predappio, where she served pasta dishes. She eventually received a pension from the Italian Republic in 1975. But it turned out Mussolini had not received a salary from the state, and therefore she could not receive a pension. After her husband's execution, she begged to have his body for private burial, but in vain. And that is all Wikipedia has to say about her. She died, as I said, in 1979.
So she got saved because 2 things happened. 1, the Americans took her, and 2... Benito was with his with the side piece.
Oh, and I guess that's why you got to let your man have a side piece, because if he's a dictator, he'll get shot with the side chick and not you.
Yeah. Would you have eaten at Mussolini's wife's place?
Honestly, just for the story.
Do you think they sold T-shirts and stuff?
Probably not, but
they
I would have like not spent a lot, but I would have had like a small. I would get the cheapest thing on the menu just to say I did.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then make fun of the husband. I would have stood over her and been like, how tall was he again? 5'7"? Loser.
All right, guys, that has been the story of Benito Mussolini.
The thing that always gets me about him is I think he's a granddaughter now who's in the Italian
parliament
and has Twitter wars now with people because she's super pro Trump and stuff like that.
She would be pro Trump. Yeah. Oh my God.
Yeah.
Ew. So,
yeah. Benito Mussolini's granddaughter or something like that.
Oh my gosh. What's her Twitter handle?
Scumbag Total Degenerate.
Granddaughter Twitter. I can't believe that. You would think that she would be against it, that we would learn from history. Not everybody's entitled.
It all comes back to
She got in a Twitter war with Jim Carrey.
Yeah. As Alessandra Mussolini, she's in parliament. Here's her right here. She has 70,000 followers.
She has really bad lip injections.
Yeah. She looks like a... She looks
like a housewife.
She looks like an aging Italian porn star.
Yes.
Yes.
And it looks like she was in Playboy.
No.
Oh, gosh, my computer's being really weird about scrolling up and down.
Mussolini,
yeah.
Playboy.
Mussolini, Alessandra Mussolini, a former actress and Playboy cover model, is a member of European Parliament. Mm-hmm. There you go. She's a far-right politician who has aggressively defended her deceased grandfather and even fought to pass the family name down to her children. Ew! Ew!
Yeah, like I said before in the thing, there's a lot of people, not a lot, but there's a good amount of people over in Italy that still look at this guy as being it's like when you talk to old people who will talk about back in the 50s, things were so simple then and things were so I remember I was talking to this one guy when I was working with this and I go, if you could live in any time, where would you live? He'd be like, man, the 1950s, everything was just made sense. Everything was simple. Everything. I go, well, what if you were black? What if you were a woman? What if you were gay? What if you were this? And he just had no answer for that. But there's so many people that look back longingly at the kind of simplicity of there's people in Russia that still, they love Vladimir Putin. They look back on Stalin as being a quality, all this kind of stuff. How many neo-Nazis love Adolf Hitler? Lots of people.
It's true. It's bananas. And we see a rise of far right wing groups in throughout Europe. And that is scary because we growing up in the U.S., we learn about World War II history and we're like, yeah, Mussolini, that idiot. And we take for granted that everybody thinks he's a dummy because we're all Americans. And you get outside and there's actually people who support these far right fascist groups that were very real in the 1940s and were not that far removed historically, which ultimately is why I gotta say, y'all, democracy is fragile as hell. Because there are groups who don't want democracy. We just think, we're always going to have the right to vote. We're always going to have a president
press,
and a free press and a Congress
and checks and balances and all that kind of stuff.
All of that. No, those are not things that are just a given. There are countries that don't have those. There are countries that currently have parliament and a president. And you know what? In a decade from now, they might not. Nicaragua had a democracy when I was a kid, and I would visit. In the 90s, we had a democracy. Mid-2000s, that stuff changed. It can be there, and then it can just go, which is why if I have a message from this podcast to everybody, it's, hey, go vote. Go get involved with politics. Be aware of what's going on. Volunteer for candidates you believe in. And more than anything, it's about country over party. It's about believing in democracy over I'm a Republican or I'm a Democrat. You need to defend the system that we have because it keeps us safe. Because it's the reason why I can make a podcast like this and not get shot in the head when I'm at the grocery store for saying the wrong thing about a leader.
I also think the thing that is this idea that it can't happen here and that, at some point, you read about again, early Hitler, early Mussolini, early these type of things. And everybody looked at it as a joke. Oh, this guy's a fool. No one's thinking about
he's
it.
He's
no
5'7". Yeah, he can't do anything.
Yeah, he can't. He's this. He's that.
He's bald. People don't do anything.
Yeah, he's got a, you know, a 16-year-old, you know, he's 16-year-old wife that was related to his mistress's, you know,
this guy doesn't
mistress.
Even get the economy right. Look, he made too much wheat this year. He's an idiot. He's not gonna do anything.
Everyone knows that he's an idiot. No, everyone doesn't know he's an idiot.
In the bumbling incompetence of a leader, it's all fun and jokes and stuff until they go to war and hundreds of thousands of people die.
For their own ego. For no reason but to essentially just the betterment of themselves.
For the betterment of their party and not the betterment of their country itself. And it scares me because sometimes I wonder if, like, in pursuit of poning the libs or whatever, we hear from people on the far right that they might harm other Americans. Like, just in the news right now, today I saw an article about not wanting to give California more aid because of our forest fires, which, where I live, you know, for those who are not in the U.S. or who are in other parts of the country, I'm in a part of L.A. where I've had fires in every direction. There have been like 5 fires in the last week, and there's north, south, east, west. They're all over. And they're from electrical grids. They're from just sparks. Sometimes it's a car fire, you know, just
someone
gross.
Driving, someone mowing a lawn, and a spark from a lawnmower.
The tiniest things can just blow up into a wildfire. And for him to be like, "Yeah, screw California," that is scary.
But also,
because it's party over country.
But also, it comes back to the incompetence in that the vast majority of the land in this state that he's saying that needs to be managed by Gavin Newsom is federal land. It's not state land. And 33% is privately owned.
Yeah. Him not being qualified to be a president and a leader and know about how the government works. It's funny. It's fun and funny to have a leader who says cute, funny things that are great tweets for those to whom it appeals, and cool that it makes you laugh at a rally. But eventually all of this adds up to incompetence that will cost real lives. I hope not. I hope I'm wrong. But in the case of Mussolini, it did.
Yes. It thrust a country into war. It thrust again, hundreds of thousands of people to their deaths. And ultimately, really, Italy's a great country, a great place to visit, but it's not viewed as being a superpower. And one of the reasons why is because of this man and what he did to Italy and the long-term harm that they did to the nation's ability.
Imagine all of the economic development that could have happened from each one of those 250,000 men if they had lived. If they had lived, each one, like half of those, could have gone on to start businesses in Italy. You know, they could have gone on to raise families with very bright people who could have created innovation. And those 250,000 people are just fires that got put out.
Yep.
Who knows what that country would be? So many people. So sad. And that is our episode on Mussolini.
Let's
do our last three takeaways to sum it up.
Okay.
Number one.
What did we learn? Weird daddy fetish.
Yeah, that was a thing.
Yeah.
But like, really though, what did we learn? I would say number one.
Okay.
Number one is incompetence is deadly.
Yes.
Number two,
Things start small.
Things start small and they get big.
Yep.
So if you think it couldn't happen here, you got to watch for the small signs. Don't wait till we already have a dictator to be like, oh, look, I guess it could happen here. Look at the signs at first and see what you can do to stop it. And number three, we learned where pizza came from.
Well, you know, yeah. And I just Googled. Yeah, you're right. Pizza Hut did start in Wichita, Kansas. So now they were not World War II veterans, the people who started Pizza Hut in particular. But the whole fact of the matter is that pizza became this American dish, essentially started when, again, the GIs went to went to Italy and saw that. So ultimately, the one positive that you can take from evil dictators who are 5'7" bald and probably, honestly, genitally, probably really small as well.
Probably, yeah.
Is ultimately a tasty dish. So the next time you go to Papa John's, you know, you can thank Mussolini. And to be honest, if Mr. Papa John himself is there, probably a huge fan of him. I'm saying the guy who runs Papa John's. Back
he's probably
in the day,
a fascist.
Probably. If you've heard him speak, more than likely, not terribly, not a huge anti-Mussolini guy.
Well, there you go. You heard it here. Where can we follow you on social media?
At Mike Sasson. Everything is M-I-K-E-S-A-S-S-O-N. That's my Facebook. That's my Twitter. That's my Instagram. Everything's real easy. You can listen to me on the Mike Sasson Show. You can find me on The River's Edge or on Google Play or SoundCloud. Or check out on my Facebook page. We do videos every week of the show itself. I'm here in Southern California. So check me out in Southern California. I've got shows all over. This month I'll be down in Orange County. I'll be in other parts of California and also back in Pennsylvania for Thanksgiving and Christmas. So yeah, check me out. And thank you very much, Kat. This is an amazing experience.
Thanks for being here, Mike, especially on such short notice. And you can follow me at The Kat Alvarado on Twitter and Instagram. And you can also follow the Villains of History Instagram or email us if we got anything wrong or you have something you have to say. villainsofhistory@gmail.com. Thank you very much for listening and have a great week. Special thanks to Matt Levin for music, David Robinson for editing, and to all of our special guests for coming on the podcast. And of course, thank you for listening.